Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say
Welcome back for a fourth episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Chris Chavez here, joined by Mitch Kastoff and Alex Lohr. And we're recording this on what would be the 64th birthday of Steve Prefontaine. He might be gone, but we all know that even to this day, Pre lives on in spirit. So on today's show, we will discuss the newly released LA Marathon fields, talk about who's running in Tokyo for the Tokyo Marathon, hit on some Russian doping and race walking and their coach their bad situation right now. And then we'll make a case for who we think deserves a Topps baseball card. But first, we'll start off with some Dubai Marathon discussion. So, guys, I spent my Thursday night in college in front of a laptop watching what seemed to be the Ethiopian National Championship in Dubai. Guys, did you take some time to curl up and watch some primetime marathoning?
I did. I tuned in. It actually came into a perfect time here on the West Coast. Just had some dinner and watched a marathon. There was a lot of talk of like them going for the world record in this one, which overall, I don't know if the total talent was there. Dubai looks like a course that could have a world record, except the hairpin turn with like the stop and turn. I don't know, man.
That was weird.
That takes a lot of momentum out of you. And, I mean, after a while, that might take a little bit of a toll. So I was not surprised that they didn't run the world record. I'm not surprised about how Bekele dropped out. When I first heard that he had, like, a quote-unquote minor kind of, like, foot or calf injury before he came into this, when that sort of news comes out right before a race, that's kind of like it just gives them a scapegoat to fall back on. And I just assume that somebody isn't quite as fit as they need to be, and they're acknowledging that, and this kind of just gave him an out. I'm not surprised Bekele dropped out. Once you first drop out of a race, which he had started to do maybe like 4 years ago, that's just always in the back of your mind, and that card is always there. And add on that minor niggle injury card that he had in his back pocket, not surprised that he dropped out.
Well, my first thought is I kind of wish that it was a little later, the start time, because I always have to wake up here in Portland at silly o'clock to watch all of your Central and East Coast marathons. And so I was kind of hoping that this would be a late night thing for a lot of people, like maybe like a 2 a.m. start or 2 a.m. end time for your East Coast folk. And for us in Portland, it was great. I got home at like 5 o'clock. It wasn't even prime time for us, but it was a great time to spend some time to watch some bizarre marathoning. Shout out to the guy. I saw both of you give someone props who you missed. the dude who wore the Bahrain jersey and then a backwards flap rim with the sticker on.
Sticker on and sunglasses.
And sunglasses. The sticker on is no longer, I have been told, is no longer cool. So I took all my stickers off my flap rim hats. But yeah, good for that guy. The course I hadn't looked at beforehand. Great course with four turns. A lot of straight running. Not sure how that worked out. And yeah, I mean, in the back of my mind, you know that Bekele is doing both these marathons. You know that I said last week he was going to go into this one at 80%, and he ran about 80% of the race. So I score myself that one. And like what Alex said, actually, there was a really good interview this week on Gawker. It was about I think he's Swedish, the half marathon guy who shit himself, that really famous photo. And he said that, I think he said, if you quit once, they asked him why he didn't just drop out. If you quit once, it's easy to do it again and again and again. It becomes a habit. So this week, I give props to that guy for not dropping out. And right, Bekele, I mean, what he – it's impossible to – I mean, he's I would say he's marginally damaging his legacy right now, but he's just accomplished so much that, you know, if he's going to drop out here, he's going to drop out there, it's not that big a deal. He's waiting to pop a big one. I still think he can run 204. We'll see how he recovers in time for London, but – yeah, I still believe he's got a good marathon in him.
Yeah, Renato Canova actually said that he was about 60% for this, and so, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm too concerned for him in London. I guess, like, he's got more of a vision where it comes to right now is maybe not what he's focusing on. Maybe his fast times aren't, you know, meant to happen now. He's probably aiming for gold in Rio, which I would still say he's a contender for, like, in a tactical race like that. I mean, this seemed a little bit like a time trial for him, but then it did turn into, like, a 35-kilometer tempo run. I'm not too concerned about Bekele or his legacy, but let's move on to some of the other guys in the race. The winner, relatively unknown runner for Adidas. We saw lots of Adidas advertisements out there, especially.
Do you want to do a sponsored post?
Yeah, right. Lalisa DeCisa gets second. This time, did not throw an elbow. And on the women's side, I was actually surprised by Tigges Tufa, who did the Elisa Montano approach in the marathon, where she's running for Bahrain now. And I thought, last I heard, was that she was Bazunish Deba's training partner in the Bronx. She looked good until the wheels came off. And the winner was Aselefic Mergia, beat out Gladys Chirono for $200,000 by 1 second. Guys, if you were 1 second away from $200,000, it's gotta hurt. But it's still, you know, a pretty impressive debut for Chirono, who broke up the Kenyan the Ethiopian sweep on the podium. I would say my champion for the whole marathon was Haile Gebrselassie's announcing skills. he was pretty good. I mean, he was a little biased towards Ethiopia, but I mean, his character was awesome. There's a video out there of him doing like an MTV Cribs style thing out in Ethiopia. I think it might have been Ray might have been the one who went out and filmed that one a couple years back. But yeah, Haile Gebrselassie it seems like the perfect partner for Tim Hutchings, in my opinion. What do you think of his skills, Alex? You being probably the better announcer of the three of us.
You know what? When you say like there's a little Ethiopian bias, I don't care at all though. You know, like I'll take bias and excitement over too analytical and I don't know, maybe. It depends on, you know, what style you like. But I loved it. Haile's like just an incredible ambassador. Very just like super poised, super eloquent. And I would love to see him on more broadcasts for sure.
Now, let's move on to the other marathon that we're going to talk about. That's Tokyo. They announced their fields this week. I kind of like the lower key matchup between Jeffrey Mutai and then Tese Kabede, because we saw them in London last year, then we saw them both face off against each other in New York the previous 2 years. I think Mutai has the 2-1 record, but I mean, these guys should, like, I think we should hype up a little bit of a rivalry there. We've got Kenya and Ethiopia, these two guys who have thrived in the World Marathon Majors. So there's some serious depth on the, at least at the top, but then at the same time, they have 21 guys who have run under 209.
So crazy.
21. One. Mitch, when I say it's, bring out a stat like that, I mean, what's your initial thought?
I mean, it's good for Tokyo. They've just really, I guess they've come up in the World Marathon Majors in the last, like, when they become a World Marathon Major 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. They've really,
I believe it's 2 years ago.
They've really become the go-to race. It used to be a kind of a weird race for, you would find an American would go there every now and then, but it's really become a staple of international marathoning. And I do like the Muay Thai Kabete matchup. I think the first marathon that we worked together, Chris, and I think Alex was there also. So it was all three of us. We were in Chicago in 2012 when Kabete put on a show. And so ever since then, I've always enjoyed the diminutive Ethiopian. He just, you know, he's got won a great PR, but I feel like I always say any marathon he goes into, he knows how to win. And with that being said, the guy that knows how to win and has won, Stephen Kiprotich.
Yeah.
You know.
He's there too.
He might have a 207 PR, but he does know how to win. I think that's his moniker. You know, doesn't perform big in these races, but we'll eke out a big win every now and then. So I always like how his name's kind of buried in there. That just kind of talks about.
He seems like the international Meb.
Yeah. He's an international Meb. And yeah, it's always funny to me that the world of marathoning is just, back to your initial question with the stats, it's just so deep that I don't think in the blurb from the IAAF they even gave him a shout-out. So.
On the women's side, it's Tiki Jelana and Bahrain Dababa on top of the women's field. But Alex, you had some quick thoughts on just Japanese running in general.
Yeah, well, if you look at the depth of Japanese running, if we compared it like side-by-side to American marathoners, they're way, way ahead of us. And I think, you know, I might have read this in an article, but I think the rationale along with that is you can, you know, X runner can be so disciplined. If you have the right discipline and the right dedication and the right, you know, clarity in training, you can discipline yourself to, you know, to be a 208, 210 guy. That X factor that, you know, born with biological talent that some of these Kenyans have, that's what gets them to that next stage. And that's what maybe, you know, we haven't seen in America yet, is we're slowly getting the discipline, but can we mix the discipline with that overall talent? But I think that the Japanese marathoners are so disciplined, that's what's really been the catalyst for their depth.
Of the field, I'm going to go with a little bit, I don't know if you can consider him a dark horse. He was second there last year. Or no, he might have won. He was last year's winner in Tokyo. Dixon Chumba, 204.32 in Chicago. Didn't win that one. So, and the guy's improving at the age of 28, which seems like the perfect time when it comes to those African marathoners, because, I mean, the world record is being set at 29, 28,
good point,
around there. So, Dixon Chumba, another guy to look out for. Those guys will not be in L.A. I'm working on my transitions here, Alex.
You're doing great.
Let's talk about the L.A. marathon. Both halls are running. This is news that came out today, earlier this morning, posted that article. On the men's side, we have Jared Ward, Matt Yano, Shadrach Biwott taking on Ryan Hall. Then we have Janet Balcom and Becky Wade, a little not as deep of a field, taking on Sarah Hall in her marathon debut. She's riding a wave of like half marathon victories, but Ryan looks healthy for now. Which one do you think has the tougher field on their hands?
Ooh, gosh, that's really tough. I mean, let's not forget that JCB. I mean, a couple of years ago, she burst on the scene, making U.S. teams, and she ran really well in New Orleans just this weekend. So Janet is back in shape and is definitely a force to be reckoned with. Becky had just kind of an okay day in Houston. I was expecting her to kind of kick the door in there. Maybe she was just off. So gosh, that's really tough. I think Janet's like right now the best bet as like, and I know Ryan's got phenomenal PRs, but man, I think Janet's the most formidable of anybody in that field.
Once I hop aboard a hype train, it's hard for me to get off. And I know there was a lot of hype. I don't know, I'm gonna use that word again because I couldn't think of a great adjective. Behind Matt Lano before Chicago. And yeah, it didn't go great. But do you know whose debut did go great? Kellen Taylor. And so they're both NAZ elite. They've both been Rosario coached. She ran 2:28 amongst the all-time best female marathon debuts in the U.S. And so I think Matt learned a lot from Chicago. And yeah, he might not have the lower 5K speed stuff, but to make him into a legendary marathoner. But he's got the half, and I think he learned a lot from that experience, and he's gonna kill it in LA.
Well, I was gonna say Matt was actually looking pretty good through Chicago. The wheels fell off a little bit, but from everything we heard, he was training really, really well. So he was really close and maybe rushed into it too much and maybe had too high of expectations. I think if the expectations for Matt didn't get out and kind of snowball as much as they did, he would have had a better day. And then Jared Ward, I mean, don't forget about his debut in Chicago was really solid when he was still in school. And he's being coached by a guy who knows a thing or two, Mr. Ed Eystone. So it should be a solid men's field.
Yeah, no, I was gonna take the men's field as a little bit, I think, the tougher one as well, just because of, you know, how well Jared Ward is doing right now, and he's not gonna have to run an NCAA championship 5 weeks after this. So I think he's probably Hall's biggest competition. They are gonna be a few Africans in the race as well. So while it is the U.S. championship, there's going to be a few international runners as well there. So, you know, maybe he might have to fend off another, like, 209 guy as well, considering if we think maybe Hall is in 209, 210 shape maybe. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of question marks around Ryan, as always. But it should be exciting to see him back in the fold again. Now we're going to take a little bit into a somber note. Some Russian doping news. It's not getting any better. We have 5 race walkers, including 3 Olympic medalists, were banned by the Russian anti-doping agency on Tuesday. Then we see Valentin Masaklov resign, who was like their head coach. He was 70 years old, so think maybe like the gags of Russian track. And then the steeplechase champion, Yulia Zarapova, faces a doping ban. And then at the same time, in that article by Supersport, I believe it was, there was a mention for the bronze medalist in the marathon, who also happened to be from Russia. So it seems like this whole doping thing is just the tip of the iceberg. There's more happening every week. What do you guys think Russian can do to clean up their image?
Honestly, they can't, is the short answer. And I wonder how diligently are they really going about this? And how hard is it to patrol? To patrol athletes in America is almost impossible. I mean, you basically have to follow them on Twitter, and they have to, you know, send texts to USADA every 10 seconds. And that is just a huge undertaking. And it costs a lot of money to just keep track of those people. I don't see Russia throwing those dollars towards an anti-doping campaign anytime soon. I think they appointed like one guy to be full-time. I think I saw an article about it. But keeping track, think how many athletes there are there and think how big Russia is. I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon.
I hate to go all, let's just say, Iraq on everyone, but you got to let in an independent investigation. You have to let them in to just as a thing of good faith. People are resigning. Whoever takes over the helm has to say, you know, I like everything that's happened in the past. That's in the past. Under a new regime, we're gonna have a clean country. But that's never gonna happen. Let's be honest with ourselves here. People have their pipe dreams about a clean sport. This has been happening for a while. I mean, I feel like I just went through this with Turkey. Like 3 years ago. And so, no, there's never gonna be a clean sport. Especially through anti-doping, and who knows? I think what's going to be interesting, and I said it last or 2 weeks ago rather, is that the information that we can gather from some of these, by we, I don't mean me personally, the royal we, that we can gather from some of these people who tested positive, to at least, you know, crack whatever doping cells exist, coaches, athletes, agents. That's going to be what's important. But to hear that like bunch of medalists are coming or being probed and might test positive, it's just like, oh man, that's the worst.
Why is this taking so long?
Hashtag cancel Russia. How bad does it have to get for the IOC to just like threaten them, like just like they did with Turkey? Because they had a very bad doping problem, and I think when it gets this bad, it's only going to be in the back of your mind whenever you see some sort of a Russian athlete with like a superb performance somewhere. You're going to think it's initially going to be one of your thoughts. I do think we're far from the end of this discussion when it comes to Russia and doping. I feel like Jamaica handled their situation a little bit well by letting that that probe come into their country and try and figure things out themselves. Mitch, you have something to add?
I do have to give some props to Lashmanova. She won the 20, or she had the 20K in London. She got caught based on photographs that were online that they tried to doctor. So I just like, I saw an internet sleuth pointed it out, but yeah, that's unbelievable. The amount of hubris you could possibly have. I kind of just want to have a little of that just to figure out how confident you have to be to run a race while you're banned and have no one trying to find out. But props to you guys. Well, props to the internet. Good work, guys.
Deflategate is going to get solved first before Russia's doping situation gets fixed. Now, let's get happy again, and let's run happy. Kaz Loxam sets the American record in the 600 in Albuquerque. No word if he celebrated afterwards with some Pollos Hermanos, but he'll have some extra cash for the performance bonus. Maybe not as much as Walter White did in that big storage room, but the big hero in this whole story is Curtis Beach, who was the guy who convinced him to run the 600 as opposed to 800 and hop in there. I spoke with Kaz yesterday, and I mean, Al, it just feels like it was just yesterday when we both got on planes to go to Penn State and we were hyping up Kaz's American record attempt. And then earlier in the day, Dwayne Solomon breaks it, and I mean, it would have been a record, whatever Kaz ran that day, had it not been for... but yeah, props to Kaz Loxam for finally getting his American record. I mean, I'd be in for a 600 race where we get Dwayne and we get Sawinski and Kaz all together. Because, I mean, it almost happened at Milrose, I think, a few years ago. But, yeah, Kaz Loxam, Al, you guys, I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you see this as a record that can probably stand for a while? Or is this just going to be one of those that goes back and forth between a bunch of people?
I think it, well, it all, I don't know if it really depends on the athletes. I think the athletes can push each other or to break it. It's, will a meet director be willing to put the race on to do it? Because that's, you know, that's the big part, you know, is somebody willing to bring in an obscure distance like the 600 to do it? But no, I think it's cool. Kaz has been really close a lot of times in a lot of different stages in his running career. I think, it's cool to see him, you know, get a little time in the sun here. I would love to see, as you said, Sawinski and Solomon and Kaz, and you know what? I wouldn't hate to see Warner in it.
Oh yeah, that's right. It all comes together.
So, yeah, I think that'd be a cool race, but it'd have to be like in the right venue. It'd be perfect. Maybe like a Milrose.
I'm happy that he finally has it officially, just because he ran the fastest one ever, but it was on a 300-meter track, so it didn't count. So now he actually gets it. Though I did like the Sawinski narrative arc of him, you know, being a late addition to that field and kind of stealing the thunder, and then really, you know, he was I don't want to call him a nobody before that, but he was pretty much, he was a late addition. He was a nobody. And he gets a Nike contract.
Working at a running store in Iowa City.
And then his whole life turned around pretty much after that race. So I like that narrative with him. And so I hope the same thing maybe at a higher level happens to Kaz. I've seen him run just so many 4x4s on those Penn State relays. And I just feel like he would have it, but he'd be maxed out the whole time. He had really great wheels, but you know, he wasn't a 400-meter guy. He was an 8 guy that would go out hard, and so, you know, the 6 is the perfect harmony for him. I'm happy he has it. Not to steal a little thunder, but it puts it, even you don't need perspective for the world record 800 outdoors, but David Rudisha goes through in 1:14:30. God, that is so fast.
Such a good point, Mitch.
So, I mean, Kaz, congratulations. I mean, We saw what he could do. He was running pretty hot outdoors last year, and he's on pace now to, you know, do something special.
Yeah, he was the runner up and got paid to be as the runner up at USA's. But there was a lot that happened there with the fall and coming into the final stretch. But Kaz Loxam, he's gonna be a contender when it comes to that 800 squad, which is always deep with the US. Another result I wanted to point out was Marvin Bracey running 6:09 for the 55. When you can finish a race that can almost be recorded in its entirety in a Vine, I think that's pretty good. So you could just get your phone out and show someone, like, hey, here's my full race. That is pretty awesome. Bracey picking up things right where he left off last year during indoor, where he was silver at Worlds, but still, I mean, he was among the fastest in the world most of indoor season. So Marvin Bracey, props.
I think it'll be really interesting to see if it translates to outdoors. And I think Marvin's the kind of guy who can make it transition to outdoors. A lot of times we'll see like a, you know, all of a sudden this, who is this guy? He's running out insane. He's winning everything indoors. And then it won't really articulate to outdoors, but Marvin, yeah, he doesn't run like a 60 guy. I think he's definitely got the strength to make it work this year.
And we're kind of seeing something similar too with Trayvon Bermell coming into indoor season after being so good outdoors with the 100 and the 200. So, yeah, we got two interesting transitions to kind of follow along. And then last results, Oregon, three guys under 13:45 for the 5K, led by Eric Jenkins. Eddie Chez was not one of them, but you've just got to expect that sort of depth, at least one. I mean, could they be 1, 2, 3 at NCAAs? Just they're pretty good up at top with the 5K. We spoke a little bit about the Ducks' chances at indoor, but that was like we were talking about the women's side. Now Ducks' chances indoor national champs repeat. You guys, your thoughts?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how they use those guys. And you know, obviously, like you said, they have three guys that go sub 13:45. Ed can clearly win the 5K if he wants. They got two guys that went sub four, or like right at four this weekend. How do they disperse those guys around? I'm sure Andy Powell is already calculating everything out right now and really taking a close look at that. It'll be interesting to see how he uses Parker Stinson. I think this is Parker's last season, period. He doesn't have outdoors. So, you know, I think Parker was used as a, hey, let's throw him into this. Let's throw him into like two races and see how many points he can scratch up. Maybe they let the reins loose on him a little bit and he takes some chances. So I would expect him to take a couple chances and maybe not let the pace dawdle at NCAAs because they can afford to have him just run one race and stack up the other races. I'm excited to see Ed Chesarek run Milrose, see if he can get that collegiate record. And because I remember so vividly when Lowy ran that, and I don't know if it was just because we were so close to him, we were in indoor range, and I think he was right there with Willis and Lear, I think, in that race. And I just like stood back and I was like, wow, Lowy is incredible. I mean, the way he ran, I'm just really excited to be able to compare Lowy and Ed at these stages of their career.
This has been made a few times, but had to have been 2012, maybe 2013, Milrose, when Bernard and Lowy went toe-to-toe in that Milrose had been 5K indoors, and Ed Chez ran also, and Ed Chez ran like 13:55, was like way off the back, but everyone's cheering for him. And now, just 3 years later, and I might be at 2 mile, I might be mixing up my events here.
I think it was 2 mile, yeah.
2 mile?
Yep.
And, you know, 3 years later, now he's in the mile, and we're talking about, like, oh, is he gonna be there with a lap to go? Who knows how fast he can run? So, for a guy I did not think was gonna develop in college. I remember picking Jake Langang to really be the big problem. I was like, oh, Chez kind of maxed out. And so
I think we all thought that. Isn't that so weird?
Just kinda ate those words. One thing that I do want to mention is I didn't watch the race, but their DMR 9:32. I heard through the grapevine that Ed Chez kind of was chilling a little in the mile. Just because that time rings very true to me, they might have to run another DMR.
Oh, man.
That time
you got to do it. You
might have to do it. So one guy to watch, and I'm not saying this because he slept on my couch about a few weeks ago, is Johnny Gregoric ran the 1200 leg for Oregon, then came back the next night, ran a 3K, 9:54. This is a guy that has been hurt at Columbia for 4 years. If he can stay healthy, he got sixth in the mile indoors last year. So this is a guy, if he can stay healthy, he's going to be you know, one of those things where he shows up at a championship meet and you forget about him, and then he knocks you on your ass.
He's the dude with the beard. That's how you know him.
It's crazy that they lose Mac Fleet, but then at the same time they're so deep the next year. Now we're gonna move to our final point of the night, where we try to come up with baseball cards, because Meb Keflezighi has something in common with 50 Cent in that they both are going to be on the new top series for the 2015 baseball cards. I think Mikhail Maroney was there too. Trying to think what some of the other names were. But guys, doesn't have to be a track athlete, but who else do you think deserves a baseball card just for no reason?
Klay Thompson.
Oh, yeah?
Did you see him throw down 37 points in one quarter the other night? That was incredible. Him or Damian Lillard?
Your boys.
My girlfriend texted me, and I told her that's a lot of points. And so that was my hot take for that one. Really impressive.
That's a lot of points. ESPN analyst Mitch Kastner, everyone.
I thought we were going to be limited to just track athletes real quick. So the easy answer is Ashton Eaton.
Oh, yeah.
Only because that he just did a quick interview about him using a little baseball swing for practice. And so,
oh, tremendous.
Yeah.
That's tremendous.
Way to put that all together.
Yeah. Dude's a stud. Really closed that loop really well. Thank you.
I feel like Ashton Eaton is like, he is probably the most fit athlete in the world, and probably the greatest all-around athlete. He needs to get out, like, we need to put him on posters. I feel like Nike just doesn't do enough with him. He's really a stud. I'm going to go with Carl Lewis, because of how bad his first pitch was. I mean, a 50 Cent can get a baseball card for a bad first pitch. I'll do Carl Lewis. I think he might have also sang the national anthem in one game, or Take Me Out to the Ball Game. It might have been at a Cubs game or something like that.
Think Chavez. Yeah. You got to know. Yeah. You got to look up Carl Lewis singing the national anthem.
Have you seen it?
Look, it's an American treasure. It's one of my favorite YouTube videos of all time. and so if you're listening and you haven't watched it, do yourself a favor and watch it maybe like 12 times, and then, I don't know, post about it a little. It's incredible.
That should be our intro song to the whole show.
It should not be, because it's really, really something.
But props to him for doing it. Can you imagine any track athlete other than Brigitte Barrett doing that right now? No. Just saying.
Brigitte Barrett hasn't sang the national anthem at a game, which I'm surprised, at least for a baseball game. I think that'd be cool to see.
Did the Fiesta Bowl, but no baseball game.
Nice job. I was trying to think of the name of it. Fiesta Bowl. One last thing before we leave. You're the vault. Congratulations to me, Payne, for breaking you on record.
Nice. Good job.
Yeah. Records are meant to be broken, especially when they're your own. Hashtag just do it. So, yeah, really, really impressive. God, moves it to number 3 in the U.S. all-time list. 11 on the world list. Pole vault, man. Vertical jumps. What did I say?
Yeah, this is the year. Last thing, I guess, looking ahead to what we might have on the upcoming schedule, I think next week will be the Armory Invitational, where we'll see Galen, the Oregon Project run. I heard some chatter that there might be a 300-meter world record attempt. I don't know if it's actually coming into fruition. But Wallace Spearman currently holds the record. It's like one of those off distances that you always forget about. Someone mentioned that to me. But yeah, there should be lots of good fast track action at the Armory. Anything else that I'm missing from the calendar? I think that might be
BU next week.
BU. That's
and I'm
right.
I'm actually commentating at Washington.
Oh, you are?
Yep.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I might go.
Oh, let's do it.
Nice. Well, you know where to see those guys. I'll be here for another podcast next week. We want to thank you guys for listening to episode 4 of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Be sure to subscribe and leave some feedback in the iTunes section below. And we'll catch you guys next week.